If you enjoy Astronomy FM Radio, please let us know with a small donation. We do rely on your support, and it's true. Every little bit counts.
AFM. You're listening to AFM Radio on astronomy.fm, around the world and beyond.
Arr. Coming up next, it's time for an AFM Radio original program, Space Pirate Radio, brought to you by the Voice of Astronomy MIDI. This is astronomy.fm.
The pirates are coming. The pirates are coming. The pirates are coming. You better watch out.
Arr.
Arr.
Arr. All right.
Yeah.
Space Pirate Radio is on the air, everyone. It is Wednesday evening, October the 15th, 2014. At least that's 9 o'clock Eastern Daylight Time from us here in the eastern portion of the U.S. and North America. Universally, it is October the 16th, 2014, about 1 minute past 1 o'clock Universal Time. So that means you are do the conversion. You're listening to us live right now. And, of course, we do have our AFM chat room wide open and ready for you to come on in and join us. So by the chat room, just go to astronomy.fm, either the homepage or just type /chat, and you'll be right in there. We'll post some links of the stuff we're talking about so you can see the actual articles and things like that. Or you can ask questions, and we'll try to answer them as best we can. I found it's really hard to talk and read it about something else at the same time. Well, anyways, we have a very special guest tonight. Last-minute notification, because I just asked him about a half hour ago. We have Stephen Ramsden. How are you, Stephen?
Hello, Marty and Diane. I'm doing fantastic. Thank you for the opportunity once again to be on your fantastic show. I'm very grateful.
So glad.
Man, we're glad to have you.
Definitely so glad to have you here. Glad you could come on at the last minute, too. So that was a total fluke. But we'll get you back.
Well, you did interrupt me watching my next issue of Star Trek Enterprise. I'm at the end of my chronological watching of all Star Trek episodes. I'm at the end of my third go-around. So this episode will have to wait one more hour.
Did I interfere or did I save you?
I was just about to press play when I got my private message. So you see where my priorities are. You and then Star Trek, so you should be on it.
Okay. Go back to some of the old shows myself, too. Well, you've had a super busy month or so since we last talked to you.
Oh, man. I live on an airplane.
You were holding back a secret, and we were finally able to can announce. We obviously congratulate you on that one now, and that was your award in London. But we're going to be all over the place. Where do you want to start out at?
Well, let's talk about that.
Okay.
If you want, I mean, I know we've only got an hour, and I'll try not to talk everyone's ear off, and just interrupt me if you need to. The Royal Observatory in Greenwich hosts an award every year. That's in Greenwich, England, which is in basically London, and it's sort of the Astrophotographer of the Year Award. So I had this photo that I took with this 12-year-old girl at DragonCon, one of the kids going in through the outreach program, and it was the longest calcium K prominence ever recorded by mankind. I love saying that. And we just happened upon it, and it was cloudy, actually, and I was just sitting there, and she and her parents were the only people left out there because everyone else gave up. And we were looking through a special Lunt Solar System's calcium scope, and all of a sudden, this gigantic eruption, this was August 31st of 2012, this gigantic filament erupted off the southwest corner of the sun, and it produced a solar tsunami on each side as it flared away. No. It produced a hydroflare, which happens when filaments get disrupted on the surface. It produced a prominence that an eruptive prominence that just blew off the sun at 300,000-400,000 miles per hour. The whole thing lasted about 20 minutes.
Wow.
And we were able to capture it on video in hydrogen alpha and calcium K. And those things are all still sitting on solarastronomy.org. If you go down to the 2012 events, it's right there, the DragonCon event, and the entire thing is there. We got this prominence extended out into three branches, all of which were over 700,000 miles long. And the largest one was 870,000 miles, at least the part I could see in my calcium scope. Well, so this was ionized calcium atoms. This wasn't hydrogen prominence like you're used to seeing in hydrogen alpha scopes. A lot of times when these things erupt, especially when it's very energetic, Marty, and when it's when it's a quick thing on the sun, you'll see a lot more of it in a higher energy wavelength. And calcium is 393 nanometers, whereas the hydrogen alpha is 656 nanometers. So calcium is much more energetic wavelengths. It'll continue on and increase in energy as the prominence enters the corona. So what you get is a more pronounced image in calcium than you do in hydrogen alpha, because it's so energized you can't even see it anymore in hydrogen alpha.
Well,
so yeah, and that happens all the time. So whenever there's an eruptive event, I'm fortunate enough to usually have a white light calcium and H-alpha scope going at a school or at an event somewhere. I always turn to calcium because you can see fantastic things in a calcium K-scope. So anyway, we captured this prominence. I just sent it in to the Royal Observatory sort of as a lark. They emailed me and asked me to send in a picture, so I did. And then the next thing I know, I'm getting this email from the Queen's House in London. Can you come to this event, this special, wine party and event in London? And, so I said, hey, why not? I asked my wife, and she's I just retired from air traffic control, so I've got lots of free time now, sort of. So I said, hey, you want to go to London? She said, yeah. She ended up not going because something came up with the dogs. But so the next thing I know, she's a lawyer here in Atlanta, so she gets occupied with a lot of stuff, and she won't trust anyone else to watch our dogs. They're very old, and the person that was going to watch them couldn't make it, so she had to stay. But I fly there, and my great friend Michael Hattie, who owns Starlight Express cameras in the UK, they make the H9 cameras and stuff. He gave me a tour around London the first day we were there, and we went to the Tower of London, and there was this giant field of red tulips. I guess they were, they may have been some other kind of flower, but there were these red flowers, and there was one for each person killed in World War I.
Poppies. Yep.
Maybe. Could have been poppies. They flowed out of the wall of the tower and went out into the grass in the tower, and it was, oh man, it was really dramatic. It was the same like thickness you feel when you're at the Vietnam Memorial in Washington, D.C. or something. You could just feel it in the air. Everybody was really sad. So that was my first highlight of my London trip, was seeing 1.2 million dead souls commemorated at a World War I memorial. And then we did a walking trip of the Thames River and went by that abomination they call the London Eye, which is a gigantic Ferris wheel. That thing was incredibly out of place, I thought, in the city of London. But it was very cool and it was very popular.
Did you ride it?
No, it took about 2 hours to get on. And, yeah. The reason I didn't get on it is because it never stopped moving. When the cars came down to the bottom, they would fit 45 people in each car, and people would just get off and get on as it was still moving. Wasn't a problem.
I'm remembering now why I did not ride it the last time I went to London. Yeah. Yes.
Well, it seemed to me it was moving so slowly to accommodate people getting on and off that it would take at least an hour and a half to go around it. And my hotel was high enough to see most of what I could see there. So we just decided that there wasn't enough time for it, so we kept going. Michael Hattie is one of the greatest people on earth, by the way, if anybody knows him. And the next day, we had an event that night, Wednesday night, at the Royal Observatory. So here I am standing at the Prime Meridian, the place, the home of time. I've never been there before. I've never noticed it before. I've been to London a few times, but... here's Isaac Newton stuff. Here's all the great astronomers, William Herschel, John. This telescope, this dome, this planetarium, and I'm sitting here at a wine party. I don't drink, but I'm at a wine party with a bunch of the biggest names in astronomy, and we're all like hobnobbing around, and it was just really weird because I'm a redneck from Georgia, and I look like a pro wrestler. So it was hard enough to try to find a suit to wear, but it was just strange for me to see all those big names in astronomy, and they were coming to me and asking me, hey, aren't you Stephen Ramsden? And I never use my name in the program because it's not about me, it's about science. Mm-hmm. But it was just a very strange feeling to have people whose work I've admired or from Astronomy Now magazine or BBC come up and ask me about myself. I thought
That's
it was very
incredible.
Strange. It was very strange for me. We went into the planetarium, and they had this fantastic planetarium show where they highlighted all these images that people had sent in from all over the world. And I was absolutely ecstatic to say that I did not win the competition. One of my biggest supporters in the UK, Alexandra Hart, who is just a fantastic young woman. She's a scientist there that studies cancer treatment in the UK. And she's also a fantastic solar imager, one of the best, maybe the best. Her image won the competition. And there were six or seven images submitted, and all but one of them, I think, came from the Charlie Bates Solar Astronomy Project from different people around the world. Yeah. So I thought that was a fantastic thing, and it was fine with me that I didn't win. But I got what they call highly commended, which I think is a consolation prize like Miss Congeniality or something.
but it sounds nice.
It was nice. The way they said it was nice, too. And highly commended Mr. Ramsden from it. You know, it was all crazy. So they had this beautiful display in the lobby of the planetarium where everyone's photos were featured on these high-tech screens, and there were these pictures on the wall. And it was just really weird, man, to be – I guess I'm just really popular now. I guess it's just the program has done so much good around the world that people are really noticing it. And to have my image and Alexander Hart's image from our program hanging on the Royal Observatory wall is just it's hard to describe. That's so cool. Then after I got done inflating my ego there for several hours, the next day we went to Hirschmancho Science Center, which is what used to be the Royal Observatory, and it's outside of London a little while. There's an Isaac Newton dome there. There's three other giant telescope domes there with antique telescopes like you wouldn't believe. And they've erected a student science center there where they bring kids from all over the southern UK, and they spend a day with these telescopes that were used in making world-changing discoveries in the 1700s and 1800s. They're now open to the public. So I took with me, like I always do, a gigantic telescope to give away to somebody. And we went through the Astronomy for Fun group, which is a group I sponsor over there, and the Baker Street Irregulars, which is a group that I'm a member of over there. Simon Bennett runs it. Anyway, I asked these guys, where's the best place to put this telescope? It was a 90-millimeter double-stacked H-alpha scope, one of about maybe 20 left on Earth. And I wanted to give it to them because they have thousands and thousands of students come through there every year to learn science with hands-on telescopes. So everybody suggested this place, so we drove out there and did it. And it happened to be a group of, I think, third or fourth graders out there at the time. So as soon as we set the scope up, I'm doing outreach with these kids in London. And that was my favorite part of the trip by far. So there's pictures of that on our webpage, on the Facebook group page, and all over solarastronomy.org. But that was what we did that day. And then the next day, we were back at the Royal Observatory in London doing an actual outreach event on the premises in front of the dome for the Royal Observatory. So that's, you know, I'm laughing about it, but it's just hard for me to explain how incredible that was. Gary Palmer, a guy that I've worked with over there, and Mark Townley arranged all this stuff. And, you know, it was like you're sitting there in Isaac Newton's living room or something, you know.
Mm-hmm. One of the meccas of astronomy.
Yeah, I mean, it is the mecca of Western world astronomy. You know, we think we invented everything, but that's where it is right there. So we've got these solar telescopes set up, and these stuffy old Brits are over there, you know, hiding their equipment and doing all the same things that a lot of astronomers do. So I just said, screw that, and I grabbed a big pack of glasses and went out into the parking lot and started talking to all the people that were out there. So we had a really good time. And that was the London Award, and that was all paid for because I didn't really have enough money to do all that. So Andy Lunt from Lunt Solar Systems came up and provided the hotels and stuff for that because he thought it was real important. And he wanted some advertising, and so he took care of that.
Whatever works.
Those guys stand behind me. They're
That's good.
They're very, very committed. It's not just committed to outreach; they are committed to that. But they have enough sense to see the long term advantage of supporting sidewalk astronomy in the U.S. and outreach groups, because you're not going to get new buyers unless you show the telescopes to people that don't already know about them.
That is very true, because with so many brick-and-mortar telescope stores just gone, You know, you're not going to walk into you're not going to walk into the local hobby shop and see a telescope and touch it.
You're not.
You're going to look at a website and you might buy something you hate.
There's only one store left in the state of Georgia that sells telescopes.
That's so sad.
It happens to be about a mile from my house, the Camera Book, and that's where I bought my first Coronado PST, actually.
Yeah, I love my Coronado.
Yeah, I've went over to lunch since then, but that's the place that started me, and had that store not been there, I would never have gotten involved in this hobby.
It's a great starter scope. I mean, I'd love to upgrade to a Lent one of these days when I set aside the money.
You know, like I tell everybody, it doesn't really matter what equipment you have. In my particular business, it's the passion of how you share it with people. I could do the same thing with a pair of solar glasses that we do with, you know, $250,000 worth of telescopes. It doesn't matter what you have. What matters is the love and passion with which you share it. It's not about bragging about telescopes and who's got the best equipment. It's about getting students in this country and around the world involved in science. We have got to get ourselves off this planet and back into interplanetary and interstellar space. That's it. That's the most important thing you could possibly imagine for the future of mankind. Mm-hmm. Yes, there's some small-term items that need to be resolved, but the long-term future of our species is interstellar exploration. We have got to start it and get it going. You're not going to do that by watching The Walking Dead every night. You're not going to do that by staring at your cell phone and drinking beer and watching football on the weekends. You have got to get science cool in the American public.
Yes, absolutely.
It's. I can't tell you how driven I am with this. I rewatched Cosmos last week for the original and the new one. And Carl Sagan was, 50 years ahead of his time. And exactly what he said was going to happen is happening. And, I could get on the soapbox forever. But listen, there is nothing more important to the future of our species than interplanetary exploration right now.
The alternative is to die with the Earth.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
And convincing somebody of that when they're worried about feeding their kids tonight and going to work tomorrow is a tough sell. But that doesn't mean it's an impossible sell. It just means it's tough. And I like tough things. So, I mean, that's why we're doing what we're doing. And listen, you guys can all know, and all the listeners probably know, as soon as you get somebody behind a telescope, it works immediately. You don't have to say anything. You just have to get them at the eyepiece and say, look, here's Saturn, or look, here's a solar prominence, or look, here's some stuff that is not, you didn't even know existed 5 minutes ago, and now you see it. This is what science is. And it works immediately on people.
You can always tell when somebody sees what you're pointing at when they go, oh, wow.
Exactly.
Yep. The oh, wow moment.
Well, it works immediately. People are always emailing me, what should I say? What should I say at this hour? I say, don't say anything. Just be nice and get them to the telescope and tell them they're looking at Saturn. Tell them they're looking at the sun. Mm-hmm. It's an amazingly effective science to help spread science in the community. The problem today is that there's at least 500 distractions between a middle school or high school student and astronomy that there didn't used to be. When we were young, I mean, I'm 50 years old almost, and when we were young, we went outside and looked at the sky. You couldn't help but look at it because that's all there was to look at. But now, there's 200 internet games, Facebook, Yahoo, the internet, television, 500 channels of garbage on TV. You know, there's so many things that kids get distracted with today that a lot of them never even see the sky.
And if you did, and if you did go outside and look up, what would you see?
Nothing.
Nothing. There's nothing to see in where most people live.
Yeah, that's another problem with it. You know, it's just become a low priority in our society. People would rather have bling bling flashy lights than be able to see the sky because nobody knows the value of our universe anymore. If it's not within 3 feet of their reach, then it doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's pretty much the way things are going now. You ever been to a fast food restaurant and a drive through and ordered something and gotten it delivered correctly where someone said thank you for your business or was very nice to you and provided good service?
Every once in a while.
Right. It's almost as rare as finding a diamond on the pavement, right? but when that happens, you remember it. You go, wow, that person really, really gave me great service. You know, in reality, they're just doing what they're supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
I liken my outreach program to that and the effect it has on people because everybody should be doing this. Everybody should be spreading what they love and sharing what they love with their community especially when it comes to knowledge or science or literature or music. Everyone should be doing that. And everyone did do that for many years, and that's how we became a great civilization. We no longer do that, where everybody's scared of each other. Everybody thinks the other person's going to kill them. Everybody's got a gun in our country. Everybody is just terrified. You don't even look at each other anymore because something's wrong with you if you look at somebody else. You know, that's what I'm saying. When you go out and you do something that helps other people with sincere motives like I have, and you show some human compassion and decency, and you teach someone something freely for no benefit for yourself, everybody looks at you like you're from Mars. because nobody does it anymore. So it is extraordinarily easy to do what I'm doing and to rise in popularity if that's what you're after. It's extraordinarily easy to do it. The way you do it is just don't charge anybody for anything. Go out and do it on your free time. Set up a telescope in public anywhere and just stand there. People will come to your telescope and look in it. Everybody loves to look in telescopes. Mm-hmm. If you're after getting your name in a magazine or who's got the biggest telescope or who's got the best image, those are not sincere motives, and that's just ego and, right. and self-absorption. You're not going to have nearly as good a time as if you just go out and say, look, this is cool, man. I want you to enjoy it. And bring people up that you wouldn't normally talk to. Take it to a neighborhood that you think you're scared to go to or whatever. You know, these things just – I feel like I'm 500 years too early for this planet when I watch people do outreach events sometimes, because people are so weird mm-hmm. about not sharing stuff with each other.
I'll tell you, Stephen, one of the nicest events that we've done lately that our club has supported, that my husband and I took our solar telescope to, downtown Detroit.
There you go.
Everybody was super nice, super friendly.
Yeah, we did how about that?
We did
you mean
an
nobody
event.
Tried to kill you or rob you while you were there?
Not
is
a
bit. Is that what
bit.
You're trying to tell me?
No. Everybody, people were thrilled to look at everything, stars, the sun.
Yeah, about that.
And it was a great feeling. It was
no
one of the
telling what kind of impact you left with a few people there. There's no, you can't judge it. You can't quantitize the effect that you may have had on somebody.
Right, exactly.
I live in the middle of downtown Atlanta, which is a horribly crime-ridden place. I'm not scared of anybody in my neighborhood because there's nothing to be scared of. Everybody feels the same way about everybody else. and everybody thinks the same about the other group. So that's funny because when I was in Tunisia this year, it's an Islamic state. You know, you got to be scared about a bomber or whatever. Those were the friendliest people I've ever met in my life by far. I had the best time in Tunisia with the astronomy club there than any astronomy club I've ever had anything to do with. Every single member turned out for every event. There were thousands of people everywhere that wanted to learn about it. Nobody there had a penny to their name, you know, from our standards, but they all felt very rich. Everybody was friendly and loving, and nobody was scared of anybody else. Listen, I could go on for hours with that, but the whole idea that you have to be afraid that you're going to get hurt if you go out into your own community is ridiculous. Mm-hmm. Nobody's going to hurt you. you know what I mean? Just set up a telescope and watch what happens. Mm-hmm. So anyway, back to this.
That is a wonderful story. I mean, we know that we've got a global audience, and we love people from other countries, you know, not the U.S. or Canada. We love the U.S. and Canada, but mm-hmm. people from outside that home market coming on and coming in the chat room and talking to us. And we don't often hear from people, you know, we've had some from Chile. We had somebody from Singapore. That's been cool. But just knowing that there is this community out there in a place like Tunisia, which I'm sure a lot of our listeners in the U.S. don't even really think about.
It was
just
fantastic, man.
Yeah. It to like know that there is, through. Yeah, that's a great thing to hear. And that's a great thing to be known that you can have a wonderful experience in a country that, most recently people probably thought about the revolutions a few years back and all that, but
it was the starting point of the Arab Spring.
Right. Exactly.
And I'll tell you, Diane, something funny about that is that I went to 7 countries this summer to visit all the affiliates of the Charlie Bates Solar Astronomy Project.
Oh, neat.
And I had time to do it. I was lucky enough to get invited. Every single newscast I saw in every single country I went to had been Americanized to the point where it looked like just a copy of Fox News or CNN or whatever. And every single one of these newscasts said the same stuff about us that our crazy newscasts say about them. But none of that existed in reality. And I already knew this, and I'd already been preaching this to people, but it was solid rock evidence that it's just the news media is exploiting the worst of every society and making everybody scared of each other. You know, this whole Ebola thing is a great example of it. Ebola kills about 1/1,000,000th of the people that influenza kills every year. But everybody's terrified that if they look up or something, they're going to get Ebola. It's crazy. It indicates a lack of scientific knowledge in the community, but it indicates more scary that the news media is in the business of exploiting the worst possible angle of the worst possible thing in every society to get more ratings. So I say turn it off. I mean, quit watching it. Go outside and look around.
Yes. You know,
there's no more accurate reporting than your own eyeballs. So I found that the same in every country. Australia, Canada, Tunisia, Paris. Everybody's newscast was scaring their local residents about whatever was scary in their local residency. And
that's a good piece of perspective to have.
Yeah, it's nuts. It's just crazy. So I say get out there. If you want to meet some new people, just go outside and meet them. Everybody wants to look at a telescope. Everybody wants to learn. there's nothing to it.
So when I moved a few months ago, I didn't get cable TV. I have no TV. I got internet, but no television, and I don't miss it. Every once in a while, I'll see some, you know, I'll stop into a place that has a television on, and I go, oh, yeah, it's still garbage.
It is. We have Netflix, and I bought myself a 75-inch television the day I retired, and it's on my wall.
Congratulations, by the way.
Thank you so much. It was 25 years in the world's busiest air traffic control facility, and I retired. They didn't even get the sentence done about, see you later, congrats, and I was already out the door. So I retired at the earliest possible moment to get the hell out. But the reason I bought this TV was to watch Star Trek from start to finish over and over again for the rest of my life. That's the only service we have is Netflix, and we don't watch anything else. My wife, she watches some other things, but I've been going through Star Trek from the original series through the Next Generation, Voyager, Deep Space Nine, Enterprise. I just keep playing them over and over again. And it sounds weird, but Gene Roddenberry and Brandon Braga and those guys, they demonstrate the future that I want to happen. And I'm just committed to it, and that's what I like to watch. So
it is a beautiful vision that Gene Roddenberry have. And you can laugh at some of the – I mean, some – you know, I was, you know, Star Trek came out 15 years before I was born. So some of the specifics of his vision from the 1960s maybe seem a little bit funny in retrospect, but the basic humanity and decency of his idea of the world is spirit, just, man. Enchanting.
Star Trek Enterprise was the last episode of that. And the intro, intro credits, my wife makes fun of me because I sit here and sing it, and sometimes I tear up just listening to it. But the intro song and credits on Star Trek Enterprise shows our world going from Kitty Hawk's first, you know, the Wright brothers' first flight all the way to five starship. And it's got this song that just brings you, you know, and I love watching it. I just get teary-eyed sometimes just watching it because we are right at the brink of this happening. We are within 100 years, I believe, of this stuff happening, and I want it to happen faster. I want to be the person who motivates someone to go do this. You know, I want to see us put down glorifying horrible things in our world, like, well, you know what they are, and turn towards science. I've committed everything I have to it, all my time, all my resources, all my wife's European vacations. That they've all been committed to this one thing because it is the most important thing to the future of our species. And obviously I'm biased on that, but you know, that's what I do. That's what you get when you ask me to talk. So
let's take a break here for a second. A little station identification. You're listening to Space Pirate Radio here on astronomy.fm. It is now 9:30 in the evening, Eastern Daylight Time, October the 15th, 2014. Universally, though, it is 1:30, October the 16th, 2014. So we're still halfway through our program. We're still live. come on into our chat room and join us. If you have questions for any of us, Stephen. We have our special guest, Stephen Ramsden, on tonight. If you haven't been listening in from the Charlie Bates Solar Astronomy Project. Got a lot of great people in our chat room right now. And if you do miss the program, don't worry. We're going to repeat this program every 4 hours for the next 24 hours, so you can still catch it on a repeat. So. All right, let's get back to it, Stephen.
Yeah, I know. I can't believe a half hour has gone by. If you get me on this soapbox, man, it's hard to stop me. And I hate to dominate the conversation, but, you know, it's just so passionate for me to do this. ASAE is coming up in Arizona on October 28th, 29th, 30th, 31st. Actually, the 29th through the 2nd, I believe. My fantastic friend, Phil Plate, whom I respect greatly, the bad astronomer, Phil Plate, will be there. Jeff Nockin awesome. And some of the other guys. Phil is a fantastic guy. He supports the program. No questions asked. And he really, really does feel exactly the same way I do about this stuff. I'll be there for what they call the Southwestern Astrophotography Imaging Conference or something. And I'll be speaking there. This event's ran by Alan Trano, who most of you probably never heard of. But he is the person behind a great deal of the major astronomy shows, and he has a drive that is unparalleled in the industry. Very underappreciated because he doesn't care about it like I do. He doesn't use his name out there. He doesn't get popular, but he puts these shows on all around the country, and he is a fantastic friend of mine. He's putting this show on in Tucson, which is the headquarters of solar astronomy in the entire world. Lunt Solar Systems is located there. Andy Lunt and the guys will be there. This is a really good show at the Tucson Convention Center, and I'll be over there giving my standard lecture, which is about an hour's worth of what I just said. It's funny because I always try to squeeze in some science, but as soon as somebody asks a question about, you know, why are you doing what you do or this and that, then it goes the same way. And you know, people seem to like it. We've got some issues with astronomy clubs in this country, in the UK and other Western countries. You know, it seems the more money people have and the more wealthy people have, the more scared they get of each other and the less likely they are to share things. Mm-hmm. So we've got some issues with astronomy clubs going down the drain here because of politics and, you know, who's got the best this or that, who's going to do the work, all that kind of crap. So I get up and I give this lecture about and I try to rekindle the original wonder of doing this hobby with people so that they can forget about, you know, who's the big shot, who's getting their name in the magazine. None of that matters. What matters is sharing the universe with the people in your community. So that's what my lectures are about at these shows. And we'll be outside the convention center, of course, using all the latest Lunt Solar Systems telescopes. And we've got Calcium K. I'll have a Shellyak high-res spectroscope out there. I really push spectroscopy in this hobby because, you know, spectroscopy is the basis of astronomy.
Yes, that is a good point.
Yeah, I push it hard, and it was a tough sell at first with middle schoolers, but now it's extremely easy because of some things I've done to make it very simple for people to understand.
Like what?
Well, I have these handheld Shellyak diffraction gratings that you can hold up, and I line the kids up. I'll find some kid that's got some crazy neon shirt, some kid with a black shirt, some kid with a white shirt, and I'll stand them all next to each other, and I'll pass out a dozen of these Shellyak handheld spectrographs and let the kids walk by and look at their shirts. Look at the sunlight reflecting off their shirts. And when you look at them, you can tell immediately why this shirt is a different color than that shirt because of the sunlight reflected off of it. So I explained to the students, well, it's because you're bathed in sunlight everywhere. That's why you see me. That's why you're alive. That's the reason you wake up every morning is because this star is providing you with energy, warmth, and light. So when you look at different colored shirts or anything with it, the different portions of the spectrum will brighten or darken based on what color the object is you're looking at. And then I'll tie that into the fact, you know, that here's these black lines going through the spectrum. This is a fingerprint for different atoms. This shows you what's in a star or any light source. These black lines here. And if it's a young crowd, I'll say they're just like UPC codes at the grocery store. You know, these lines tell you what this product is. So if it's an older crowd, I'll explain the absorption lines and the re-emission lines of hydrogen and calcium. And then we'll look through the telescopes, and I have that super-duper high-res spectroscope on top of the telescope. So if they want to look in there, they can, and they can turn it and they can see a close-up image of the hydrogen alpha or the calcium absorption lines in the spectrum. It's really effective if you show them something they can see and relate to immediately. If you just lecture for 10 minutes about spectroscopy and then have them look through a spectroscope, it's a pointless waste of time, usually. I mean, no one understands at all what they're looking at. But if you explain it in real-world terms, they really catch on to it quick. So did you have a question?
No, just wanted to say that really can't be emphasized enough, Stephen, is, you know, for those of us who do outreach a lot, understanding what is the wrong thing to do and what is going to turn people off is an important thing to know and to discuss.
And I tell people those things all the time, and I say, you know, it's much more important to put out the correct information than it is just to make up what you don't know. And a lot of people in this hobby, I would say less than 1% of the people that own a hydrogen alpha telescope have any idea what they're actually looking at in the telescope. And you'll see and hear dozens of just made-up stories by people telling, you know, when they go to the eyepiece, well, what is this? And somebody will say something like, oh, it's the red light from the sun, or it's, you know, it's the surface of the sun. It's not the surface of the sun. It's the chromosphere. Mm-hmm. But it's a long story. But the point is, spectroscopy and understanding it gives you 100 times the fascination from the hobby than someone just BSing their way through what you're looking at. If you can get people to understand it, it's better than any sci-fi movie ever made. It's better than any conspiracy theory you could possibly dream up. When you understand what is really going on in that floating physics lab up there in the sky, it expands the experience tenfold. So I tell people, listen, if you don't know, just don't answer. Just say, I don't know. Don't give them some made up stuff. So that's a good point you made there. Correct information is very important. Mm-hmm. And I don't even know why I should have to say that. But a lot of people get self-conscious because they don't know. I doubt you'll find anybody that you ask in your local area that knows what they're looking at in a hydrogen alpha telescope or a calcium K telescope.
They look at the flames on the side of the sun.
Well, it's the sun, yes. But
they'll say the flames.
Yeah, or the flares. Look at that solar flare.
The flares, that's solar flare.
That's not a solar flare. Okay. And, you know, when you bring that up in chat rooms or online or something, people think you're a stick in the mud. You know, you're a stickler for details. I am a stickler for details because I want this person's first introduction to astronomy to be factual. Okay. Mm-hmm. I don't want it to evolve into a second gunman on the grassy knoll story. I want them to know what they're actually looking at. You know, I just feel it's our duty as outreach providers to do that. So after London, let's see, what happened after London? Well, there was the Woodland Hills Camera and Telescope Show in Los Angeles last week.
That looked like fun.
Yeah, it was. It was pretty cool. Alan Traynor and I went together. He ran that show. It was at Pierce College in Los Angeles. A great deal of young people there, which I'm not used to seeing at other astronomy events. And I don't mean this in a bad way, but me going to an astronomy club meeting or preaching solar astronomy to astronomers is a waste of my time. It's not what the program is for. It is for encouraging those astronomers to go out with me to the general public and bring people into astronomy. To me, that is the goal of what I'm doing. So I much prefer a crowd of people who've never heard of it, never looked through a telescope, to a bunch of gassy old astronomers telling me how to do what I'm doing. If you know what I mean? You know, they're the worst. when you get the experienced astronomers up to your scope, they're all telling you don't know what you're talking about and how I should use my scopes. You know, I don't have time for all that, man. I much prefer a crowd of new people that don't know anything so you can be their first experience in astronomy. And I don't mean that in a derogatory manner. I'm just kind of being funny.
Well, but, no, I mean, there's really something to be said for that. I mean, just the idea of some of the events I've been to this year where the weather was spotty. I showed people stars. Hey, do you want to see a star through a telescope? That's not something that would normally do. And these weren't, you know, necessarily colored stars or double stars. It was just a star.
A star, yeah.
But it was cool.
Yeah,
because they'd
cool.
never seen it before.
Yeah, man. I mean, it's fantastic. I mean, that star and the stories around it and the imagination that you can generate from looking at it is incredible. And, you know, astronomers tend to play down anything that's not gigantic, like it's not Omega Centauri or it's not the Orion Nebula. It's not worth looking at. It's all worth looking at. Mm-hmm. The fact that light source exists and probably has planets going around it with people looking back at us, is fascinating, man. I mean, you can't tell what a kid or a high schooler or even an adult is going to get out of it. They don't see it the same way you see it as a seasoned astronomer.
Right.
So point it at anything and start looking. Point it at the empty sky. That's a good point. It doesn't matter because no one else sees it the way you do. And these general public people don't have the same restrictions on what's interesting that astronomers do. So,
right, exactly.
Yeah, you know, that's a great point. I'm going to include that in my next lecture. So the Woodland Hills event was fun. Serious jet lag coming back from that. We just passed. Now, the Charlie Bates Solar Astronomy Project is at solarastronomy.org. And our main page that we relate to the public is a Facebook group page called the Charlie Bates Solar Astronomy Project. Our main deal, I say our, it's just me. My wife's the lawyer, and I'm the director and founder of it. I started in 2008 seeing about 10,000, 20,000 people with a PST at the local Starbucks. And by the end of that year, it had grown to events every week. I routinely see about 80,000 kids a year. But in the last 2 years, it has grown to a global thing where there's 60 or 70 people across the United States that do it with our equipment. And glasses, and there's another 100 or so around the world that do it. So we are in the 250,000 students per year range now. And this is not just giving them a pamphlet and telling them to study science. This is people at telescopes with you looking at it, explaining what you're seeing, and you actually learn something. So I'm extremely proud of that, the fact that we're in all these countries. And I'll tell you the secret to it. If you want to go out and start your own thing tomorrow and get the same place, just give away the stuff you're not using. That's the secret. Selling your $20 objective filter on AstroMart for $18 might get you $18, but giving it to someone in Pakistan or Uruguay or somewhere can start an entire community outreach program. The reason this program got popular in other countries was because I decided early on that any new piece of equipment I bought, I was going to give away the previous piece to somebody else. It was not a financially sound decision, but I'm not motivated by making money. I'm motivated by changing the culture for the better. So we started giving away all this stuff and just saying, hey, if you're doing outreach, here's an H-Alpha telescope. Have at it. I'm glad to give it to you. It's worked out well. There have been some abuses. I just don't think about those. But like my wife says, you can put the opportunity out there. You can't control what happens with it. But so far, it's been really good. So we've given equipment to countries all over the world, and people are running their own outreach programs in their local communities, and they're using my glasses, you know, that Lunt Solar Systems is now buying, thank God, because I couldn't afford them anymore. But, you know, to see your glasses on a bunch of people at a girls' high school in Pakistan using your telescope, it is a phenomenal and greatly rewarding experience, because you know you're doing something. You know, you're having some effect, and that's what we're into now. So I just passed my 60,000th student this year in Atlanta, because that's the main thing. You know, aside from all this stuff, I'd still go to 3 or 4 schools a week and just teach kids about astronomy, because it's fun. But we just passed our 60,000th student here, and we're hoping to get about 75,000, 80,000 again this year. But around the world, we're well beyond 250,000 students this year.
That's great.
And I'm real happy about that. Do you have anything you need to interject here? I know I'm talking to your office always.
not particularly. I just want to make sure you mention your fundraiser, your yearly fundraiser, and you got a little raffle going on. And
yeah, I would rather pull my toenails out with pliers and then burn the empty knobs than ask for money. But since I retired from my 200 grand a year job where I was giving half my income to the charity, I'm now retired and took a 60% pay cut. So it's more difficult to run the charity on my own like I was doing. So we, once a year, begrudgingly, I do a Facebook fundraiser. And what I do is I give away some spectacular piece of equipment, which I did last year. It was a really nice H-Alpha scope from Lunt last year. This year, it is a fantastic 5-inch carbon fiber triplet from Explorer Scientific. It's 127mm, which is really, you know, one of the scopes to have for planetary or solar. It's a beautiful scope. It's the scope that I won at the Starlight Festival for winning this year's Astro Oscar. They gave it this 5-inch triplet, and I said, "Yeah, thanks, man." And I was looking at it the whole time, thinking that's going to be a great raffle prize. So we're going to give that scope away. It's brand new in a case, and a Lunt Solar Systems 2-inch Herschel wedge, which will allow anybody who wins this to see sunspots and granulations like they'd never believe. And it also have nighttime equipment on it, so you can do sissy astronomy and look at planets and stuff with it too. So we're gonna give that away. And the way you enter this raffle, and you don't have to enter the raffle if you don't want to. I really wish I didn't have to advertise anything, and just people would donate $100 here and there throughout the year, but that doesn't happen. So it's $100 per entry to win this telescope. And you can do that through PayPal on the solarastronomy.org site. Or if you have $5 that you can spare, that is 21 more students who will get the full program from the Charlie Bates Solar Astronomy Project, and that is greatly appreciated also. But I put the ticket price. It's not really a ticket. It's just every $100 donation gets you another chance to win this telescope. And if you're in the U.S., we'll ship it to you for nothing. And if you're in some foreign country, it's going to be up to you to pay the customs and all that stuff. So that's going on now, and the drawing will be November 30th. We just started it yesterday, and we're currently at $5,145 raised out of the $30,000 goal. Cool. So I should say every single penny of that goes to giving students hand-on instruction. I pay an attorney, a lawyer. I'm sorry. I pay an attorney, an accountant, and insurance, which adds up to 2.8% of my annual budget. And every single penny of the rest of that money goes directly to providing this to students. Nobody gets paid a salary. There's no travel expenses taken out of the charity. It is all straight up handled in an impeccable fashion. So that's what the fundraiser is all about. And if you want to donate again, just go to solarastronomy.org. You can look at the details and pictures of the scope, and you can send them some money that way. And while you're at it, donate $100 to Astronomy FM, because you wouldn't be hearing about any of this without people doing this job.
Thank you very much, David.
Well, it's a great service. I mean, people take this stuff for granted. You know, it's like Registax, the popular stacking software. It's given away free for astroimagers to use, but there's a donation link on the page. You know, this didn't just fall out of the sky. I mean, somebody worked hard on this. And if you want these kind of choices available in astronomy, you've got to get yourself out of the everything must be free attitude. Mm-hmm. You know, you have got to support the science and support the people that are doing the work, like Astronomy FM, in order for this to continue. You know, that's just the way it is. So you guys aren't throwing wild parties with caviar with your donation money. You're paying for web servers and hosting packages. You know, you're paying for the mechanics on the show.
100% of our donations goes to our program. We're all volunteers.
Yes.
Yeah, same here. And, you know, it surprises me. These people I used to work with, they'll, and I'm not a religious person, I don't care about it, but they'll give 10, 15% of their income to a local church or something, and you're paying like $400 a week to go to church. What about the other things that are important in life? You know, then they'll leave a $1 tip at the Waffle House on a $50 tab. Anyway, it's a long story, but we do a once a year fundraiser, so I don't pester anybody the rest of the year. I just consolidate it all to these 5-6 weeks in the fall, and that's what drives the entire program. It has to be done, and I would appreciate your participation in it if anybody wants to.
Oh, excellent, excellent, excellent.
One last thing.
We're all on the same page. One last thing. We still got a whole 10 minutes. Well, I guess.
Yeah.
That would be one last thing. Go ahead.
Since each of my sentences are 8 minutes long, that. I just love the show. I love the crowd you guys have, and I love looking in the chat room. It's just a good service, and I'm just happy to be here. International Sunday 2015. For those of you that participated in International Sunday 2014, congratulations. We had outreach events in every time zone on Earth. Pictures from all over the place, people using our glasses, using our equipment or their own equipment. I would say 120,000 people were reached on that day. So my previous social media got a date?
Yeah,
June 21st, 2015, on the summer solstice. Our previous social media director and I came up with this idea, and we're going to do it again this year. Last year I launched it from Australia. This year we're going to be in Germany with the Bresser Corporation, which is the most well-respected astronomy retailer in all of Europe. So they're sponsoring it this year. We're going to fly there to their city in Germany and launch it from there. And the plan is to get anybody who's interested. You don't have to have a telescope. You don't have to have anything. Anybody who's interested, share on either social media or out in their community, preferably. Just go outside and share the awesomeness of the sun. Think about it. If you have a telescope, set it up. Don't charge anybody anything. Just try and share some knowledge of our sun and our solar system with someone in your community. That's what International Sunday is. It's a way to share appreciation for the fact that this thing exists. It's easy to study. It's a great way to get into science. And we're just encouraging everybody on Earth to think about the sun for a few hours that day and go do something, you know. Don't sit in your room and isolate yourself. Get outside, meet the community, and share the sun. We'll give you glasses. We'll help you do it. We'll do anything we can to get you interested in it, but we're just trying to get everybody to concentrate on that one day to go out and do it, and it's called International Sunday. There's a webpage on Facebook, International Sunday 2015, and you can see all this through solarastronomy.org or the Charlie Bates Solar Astronomy Project Facebook group. And there you have it.
And that happens to be a Sunday.
Yeah. That's why we call it International Sunday. Get it?
Well, it's like
play on Okay. It's also the solstice, too.
Which is last year it was on a Sunday, the day which was not the solstice. But this year it is actually on the solstice. So that's even better.
That's cool.
Now we call this now, because we are an international organization here, it is the June solstice.
Yes, yes. Not the summer. Yeah.
Not the summer solstice or the winter solstice, because it is both. Yes, right. It is the June solstice. So.
Yeah, and it was winter in Australia when I launched the Summer Solstice International Sun. So that's good. The Facebook group, by the way, if anybody gets on there and joins it, we have members from all over the world that get on there and they post the best solar images you will find anywhere, anytime on the Charlie Bates Solar Astronomy Project. There's some copycat pages out there. There's some people that are tripping on egos and stuff, but this page is where you will find the most up-to-date images of the sun before even NASA puts them out. So if you want to keep up with what's going on Old Sol, that's the place to be. Go join the group. If you get too many notifications, just turn off notifications and check on it occasionally. But
these
the Charlie Bates
Sol,
yeah, they're fantastic, man. It's hard to believe how much the technology has improved in the last year or two or 10 years.
And it's hopping. I mean, it seriously looks you have people are uploading something literally every hour to this community.
Oh, yeah. More like every half an hour. But,
yeah.
But you know, these old-timey notions about the sun being quiet, not worth looking at during solar are just garbage, man. There's always something awesome on the sun. We've had X flares in the last month. We've just yesterday, M-class solar flares. This morning when I looked, there were the largest coronal loops I've ever seen on the side of the sun.
I saw that.
Yeah,
naysayers, the naysayers, oh, the sun's dying, there's no activity. That's garbage, man. There's always activity in the sun's chromosphere, which is what you're looking at through these narrowband telescopes. Yeah, there may not be any sunspots with an old-timey white light objective filter, but, you know, listen, Grandpa, go buy a H-alpha scope and point it at the sun, and you will see stuff every day. It will amaze you every single day, minimum or maximum.
So I got to give a little update on what the sun is looking like right now. There are two moderate-sized sunspots on the sun. It looks kind of nice. Definitely both of them are bigger than the sun. They're in the southern hemisphere of the sun. Bigger than the Earth. Yes, sorry.
Because if there's one bigger than the sun, I'm going to have to end this conversation.
And there was just a major solar flare around the far side of the sun, but just barely around the far side of the sun. That's what's causing those loops that you said. And it's getting ready to rotate this way. Now, if it rotates this way and flares up again, we're going to have some pretty interesting solar viewing this week and the next couple of weeks. So definitely get out there with your H-alpha or calcium telescope and start looking at what's rotating on the sun this week.
Outreach events scheduled every day for the next 5 days at different schools in a state park. Those coronal loops, I just looked at the SDO image in 304 angstroms, the red one, mm-hmm. and they're still there. I've never seen coronal loops that large before, and they have been going for 20 hours plus. So this image from SDO is 7 minutes behind, and they're still there. It's amazing. So I can't wait till the sun rises tomorrow so I can look at them again. It's unbelievable to me that those coronal loops are still going. Those loops are caused by flares on the sun. The after effect of a flare is always coronal loops where the magnetic fields are resetting themselves, and they're still up there. So you can look at it online right now and see what's going on.
And of course, I'll take credit for this happening on the sun because I'm not I'm not into work tomorrow because I have to go to a conference. So I won't be able to get to a telescope.
Well, I was out there today, and it was cloudy, and I sat out there for 4 hours in the clouds waiting for a break, and I got a 32-second break where I filmed a video and made a picture and put it on the Charlie Bates page. So I did get a picture of him, but I hope to get a better picture tomorrow with a bunch of students that I'm going to be visiting.
Hey, I see you've got the one post on there about how solar activity has caused auroral sights in the UK and parts up, you know, north and presumably parts south. Now, I will be actually tomorrow night on a plane from Detroit to Manchester.
Sit on the left side.
Sit on the left side, okay, because I was fortunate enough to see the Northern Lights from a over-the-pole San Francisco to London flight back in 2001. So it sounds like we may be in for another dose of that.
There will be auroras visible from the left side of that airplane if you take a camera and sit on the left. Get on your airline webpage and move your seat, okay? Because yesterday, inexplicably, while this M-class flare was going on, the KP index on the sun rose up to 7, which is extremely high. Wow. There were auroras visible all over northern London, northern England, and Scotland last night and the night before. And the same thing is going to keep going for now at least 3 more days because the effects from this flare take about 4 days to get here. So I would strongly suggest getting online and changing your seat to a window seat on the left side of the plane and taking some sort of camera with you.
Yeah, I just looked that up on the SOHO website. The solar wind, moderate speed of about 400 kilometers per second, but that particle density is really high at 7.07 protons per cubic centimeter. That is pretty high.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now on Space Weather Now, which is the NOAA site for space weather. There's currently there was a G1 magnetic storm in the past 24 hours, but 400 kilometers per second speed and high particles. Yeah. So I think that you will be able to see some aurora if you're on the left side of the plane and there's not a deck of clouds below you.
That'd be cool.
Yeah, really. I'll have to tell you all about it when I get back, which I will be missing, though, or at least I will not have my PSD on me for a partial solar eclipse that we've got coming up week on the 23rd.
October 23rd. My friend Kevin Lagore from Focus Astronomy will be providing live coverage of that out in Los Angeles. He's a fantastic young man. He's also on Facebook, Focus Astronomy. And you'll be able to see it on various different portals. They'll be showing a partial eclipse. Here in Atlanta, it will be visible for about 8 minutes at sunset. So I doubt we're going to see it because Atlanta's covered with pine trees and we don't see the horizon. But it will be a spectacular event. And, of course, Rainbow Symphony out in California is providing the glasses worldwide for this. That's the place where I buy the Charlie Bates glasses and also where NASA gets their glasses. So, it'll be a sight to see, especially if you're on the West Coast. That'll be October 23rd. What is it, 2 to 3 p.m. time range, something like that. That'll be something to see. And then, of course, that'll just prep everybody for the August 21st, 2017, total solar eclipse.
Oh, yeah.
We'll go across the entire nation. I cannot wait for that. That's my birthday, by the way.
Good present.
There you go. I think I'm running out of time once again.
Yeah, my father had a total solar eclipse for his 11th birthday when he lived in Charleston, South Carolina.
I'm pretty sure I'm a little older than your father. Thanks for dating me, for making me feel like an old codger. That earlier comment, you said 15 years before you were born, something happened. I was thinking, oh, Star Trek. I can remember watching that live as a little kid, so I'm really feeling old.
I mean, I grew up on Next Gen. That was my Star Trek era.
Wow. Yeah, I was already a bitter old man, an air traffic controller by the time the Next Generation came out.
Well, Stu,
good for you.
Really, really appreciate you being on tonight.
Yeah, love having you on as always.
Definitely get you back on real, real soon here. I want to thank everybody that's been in our chat room tonight. Really appreciate it. And don't forget, we're going to repeat this program every 4 hours for the next 24 hours. Don't forget, stick around. We still have Astronomy Ireland, Planetary Scientists, Naked Astronomy, all those good programs following coming right up here in about five more or a couple more, just a couple more minutes. So I really want to thank everybody out there. Don't forget the donate sections on the Charlie Bates Solar Astronomy page and our own astronomy.fm page too. So keep us going. Thank you all very, very much. Appreciate it.
Yes. Thank you all.
Good night, Stephen. Good night, Diane.
Good night. Good night, Marty. Good night, Stephen.
Good night, everybody.
We hope that you've enjoyed this program from AFM Radio, the broadcast service of astronomy.fm. This program has been released under Creative Commons license. Please contact us for details. You may find more of our AFM original programs on our website. It's really easy to find us. We are astronomy.fm. You may also find us in the iTunes radio listings near the top of the News Talk section, and also as an iTunes podcast selection. We'd love to hear your comments. Please email us at radio@astronomy.fm. Thanks so much for being part of the voice of astronomy around the world and across the known universe. This is Astronomy.fm Radio.
Hi, this is Tavi Greiner, Astronomy.fm's Vice President of Communications. If you enjoy our programming, please let us know with a donation to astronomy.fm/donate. We really do rely on your support, and it's true, every little bit counts. AFM.